Welcome to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. With me today is a gentleman who, when I started this series, I did not know his name. But it was actually through my father saying, Jacques, Jacques, you have to interview this guy. And 2 days later, my friends Stan and Andrew Milam saying, hey, Jacques, you have to interview this guy. With that said, here is this guy. Let's welcome Gary Hackbarth. Gary, welcome to Kentish.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. As we're going to learn, and if you look back in the record books, you were one of the top drivers from the Central Division from the 1970s. And as I've learned in my history research with Eldon's, you were probably one of the top three drivers to race Eldon's in North America. So it's been very cool to research. So I guess if we start at the beginning, where are you originally from?
Grew up and still live in Janesville. Spent my whole life here, so.
Okay. Yeah, about 45 minutes southwest of Milwaukee. Very cool.
Right.
And how was it you came about catching the racing bug?
Well, when I was 5 or 6 years old, my parents would go to the racetrack all the time. We'd go to Rockford Speedway or Angel Park in Sun Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, we'd go to the Milwaukee Mile, and I came home from school one day, and my father built me a quarter midget. My father was real handy, and we lived in the country at the time, and I would drive the little midget around the house and around my grandparents' farm. And I think when I was 7 or 8 years old, Fox Corporation was building Fox go-karts in Janesville, and bought a Fox go-kart. And at that time, back in the 50s, why go-kart tracks were like golf courses now. They were all over the place. I think there was 5 or 6 go-kart tracks in less than an hour from our house.
Wow.
So it was pretty, there was a track in Bloyd, one in Rockford, Milton, Monroe, of course, Sugar River Raceway, still over in Broadhead, but all the other ones turned out to be subdivisions.
Right. Yeah, that has that tendency. And I got my start at Sugar River in 95 was my first laps in a kart.
So yeah, I can't remember. I love that place, especially at night. A guy started Don Furman. He'd run races on Saturday nights, and it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. And so how many years did you competitively race karts?
I raced go-karts until I got my driver's license when I was 16, and then I didn't think running go-karts was all that important once I had my driver's license.
It tends to lead to other things, yeah.
And at that time, Fox built one enduro kart, and I had the opportunity to run that a couple times down at Blackhawk Farms, and didn't have much luck with it because it had side tanks on it, and every time I go around the carousel at Blackhawk Farms, it'd suck the gas away from the pickup points, and the engines would seize up.
Yeah. Wow. So, Stan mentioned to me that you actually had the opportunity to race karts at Meadowdale.
Yeah, I was pretty young, and I don't remember much about that place. That was the longest track I'd ever been on at the time, and I thought I'd never get back to the pits. And the only thing I remember about that was it was hot, and that Mons wall was pretty intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. I never had the opportunity, but there's a preservation society that kind of made the track a kind of an open public park now. So it's a cool kind of memorial to what the track was.
Yeah, I never. Lindale Farms was another one. Mm-hmm. I never liked going to those places because I didn't appreciate sitting in the back seat of the car for over an hour, and I was more interested in running the short tracks around Janesville that we could get to in less than an hour.
Yeah. So you get your license when you're 16. You do some enduro kart stuff. How was it you worked into car racing?
Well, after the enduro kart deal, I worked for Fox Corporation. We met them through buying the go-karts, and they had a snowmobile race team I raced snowmobiles for him off and on. And in 1970, my father had a friend that his son bought a 69 Triumph Spitfire, and he smashed it up on the highway. And my father bought it, and we did the body work on it, put a roll bar in it, steel wheels on it, and that's what I took my Sports Car Club of America competition, get the competition license. That's what I took it in. That was the slowest car I'd ever driven, Jack, and that was the closest I ever came to being on my head.
Oh, boy.
I was going around the carousel a couple times at Black Hawk Farms, and the axle would snap on it, and the tire and part of the axle would come out and get jammed up underneath the fenders, and that was pretty exciting.
Perfect. Yeah, just what you want. So you start with the Triumph. After that, do you come up into Formula Ford, or did you have another car you raced before then?
No, we... had that Triumph for a year. I raced at Blackhawk, and I raced once at State Fair Park. They set up a road course at State Fair Park, and once at the Dane County Coliseum, and I raced up there. And then after that, we sold it, and Bruce Kramer from Rockford was an Eldon dealer. We went down and looked at a couple cars he had, and then we went over to I think it was Racine. The guy was selling Crosleys, but we couldn't make a deal on a Crosley, so we bought the Eldon.
Okay. And so, you raced an Eldon Mark 8 at first, and then I don't have photo evidence of you racing a Mark 8, but I definitely have photo evidence of you in an Eldon Mark 10C. That was the wedge nose car. But at the time, if you look in Formula Car magazine results, it's not known as an Eldon; it's known as an H&H Special.
Yeah, I don't know what we were thinking about that, but I don't know if Bruce got out of. He might have dropped the dealership or didn't sell Eldons anymore. I don't know what that was all about, but I can remember I got a couple pictures here of that car with. H&H Special on it.
Very cool. And both of those cars, the Mark 8 you had, Paul Fanner owns up in California, and your name appears in the logbook for that. And then your Mark 10C belongs to a gentleman by the name of Larry Haynes. Larry owns a company in Albuquerque or thereabouts called LCH Restoration, and he's actually, I believe, racing that car this weekend.
Wow, I would like to see those. Yeah, those bring back a lot of good memories, you know, starting out.
Yeah. And so from there on, you ran a Lola T342 at the runoffs in 76. That was your first runoffs experience. What was that like, jumping up to national competition?
Well, it was a lot of traveling. At that time, I think you could only count 6 nationals. I think it was, I don't know, 6 or 9. But we did a lot of traveling, and those Lola cars, I always liked them. Carl Haas was real helpful to us, and we did a lot of traveling when we did the nationals. I think you could count 1 or 2 races out of your division. And we were going all over.
Yeah. And so at some point in the late 70s, this is after your Eldon experience, and after you ran, you also had a Doulon MP19. I know those are quick cars at Road America.
I ran the 342, and then I think after that I had a 440 Lola, and then got to know Joe Harris from Rockford Motorsports. He started selling Doulons, and first year I drove a Doulon for him, I won Central Division National Championship, and he drove the same car and won regional championship. So a car. We ran that car probably 20 times that summer.
Wow. Wow. So in roughly 1979, you began an association with Carl Haas. What was it like to run and work with Carl?
Well, that started off on a funny note. He called me up, and at that time, well, I still have it, but they called it a chauffeur's license. You know, you could drive semis, and I had a chauffeur's license. He called me up and said that he bought a race car hauler out in California and wanted me to go out and pick it up. Mm-hmm. So I went out. He flew me out to California. I drove it back, and the tractor and trailer that I picked up belonged to John David Briggs. Mm-hmm. And it had the Flamingo Casino painted all over the side of it. So I drew a lot of attention driving that from California back to Chicago.
No doubt. No doubt.
And then I delivered the truck to Highland Park, and he asked me what I was going to do for 1979, and I told him I could go to Rockford and drive a Doolan for nothing. Mm-hmm. He said he'd give me a 540 if I wrecked anything. I had to pay for it myself, and I could bring it back in November. So wow. That's how that started.
Wow. And I heard a story from our dear friend Stan that in 1979 you won the June sprints, and you did it with one shock absorber in the rear dangling off the back of the car.
Yeah, that, well, I'll tell you, I grew up with Stanley Fox, and mm-hmm. he always used to say he could be a hero or a zero. Mm-hmm. And if I remember right, the top of the shock broke, but it was on the right rear of the car, and at Elkhart Lake, I only had to worry about two corners I had to get through.
Yeah.
But that would affect, that would be turn 5 and turn 8. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them were all right-handers, so.
Wow.
Didn't make much difference. Well, it did, but.
Yeah.
I pulled it off.
And what Stan told me was you won by quite a bit that day as well. And I think he said second place was Steve Ice with a similar Lola. So I think for those listening to you for the first time or knowing of you, I think that shows in great detail the amount of speed you were able to exhibit.
Well, that was a strange situation to begin with because we bought a Stimola engine from Joe Stimola prior to Elkhart Lake, and we didn't get it in time, so he sent two of his mechanics to meet us at Elkhart Lake Friday morning with the engine. So we put the engine in the car. Friday morning I went out for practice and ran a couple laps. They told me to come in and they checked everything over, and we put a new set of tires on, and I went out for qualifying and ran a couple laps and came in and they checked everything over and they told me to let her have it. So I went out, and I think that was the year I was 2 seconds faster than a second place car that's start the race.
Wow. So thereafter, I have records of you running in 1980, and I've seen that footage on YouTube, the 1980 runoffs, where you finished sixth in probably the same T540. And thereafter, what I've been able to ascertain is, I don't know what you raced in 81 through 83, but I know you had an 84 Reynard come 1984. What were those years like as Formula Ford started getting a lot more where the car had more effect than the driver, especially with the Swift coming out?
Well, after the 1980 season, when Michael Andretti turned 21, mm-hmm. and I could see the writing on the wall there. So, what in between 81 and 84, I had got mixed up with Ocelot Racing in Madison. Mm-hmm. And I ran a Sports 2000 a couple of races, but you know, that was kind of a low budget here and there type thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think the gentleman's name in Rockford that had the Renard was Bob Smith. He used to work for Rockford Motorsports, and he had the Renard dealership, and I picked up a couple rides from him.
So if you look back at those years, and what was your last year of active competition?
That would have been 1980.
Okay. So if we look at those years and the cars you raced, the Eldons, the Doulons, the Lolas, the Reynard, looking back, what was your favorite car?
Let's see. The easiest car to set up and the strongest, and I don't know what it was about it, but it just fit me just right, was the last one I'd driven, the T540. Mm-hmm. Lola, that thing. I never thought that I was in a position with that car that I couldn't drive myself out of, whether it was a dried racetrack or a wet racetrack. I always felt comfortable with it.
Yeah.
But I've been pretty lucky to have good equipment with my father around. He told me when I was racing go-karts that he wouldn't let me drive anything that wasn't safe. Mm-hmm. So once I got out on the racetrack, I didn't have to worry about anything falling off or not tightening anything up. Mm-hmm. But I liked every one of the Lolas, and but by far, 540 was top of the list for me.
Okay. And if we look at your career, what was the main reason you kind of got out of Formula Ford competition?
Expense.
Yeah.
It just got to be... In 1980, I can remember going to, it started in 79, but I came home from work one day and my van was backed up to our shop, and I walked out in the shop and said, "What happened to the race car?" And my dad said, "I put it in the back of the van." Mm-hmm. And it just got to the point where, you know, people were... Some of the competition was putting a new set of tires on for qualifying, then a new set for the race. Mm-hmm. We'd run one set a weekend, and the only spares we had were, I had one spare head, and it just got to the point where, you know, it was getting too expensive.
Yeah. If we look back at your time, and especially running nationally, who was... your main competition where you knew driving to the track, this person's always going to be on the point, you know, I know this person's always going to be at the front end of the grid.
Well, you know, all the tracks we ran in the Central Division and out of the Central Division, mm-hmm. I seemed to run my best at Blackhawk Farms at Elkhart Lake, mm-hmm. and Dave Wietzenloff ran good everywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, he was... he's had quite a career in Formula Ford, and he was always up in front. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, looking back, what is it you miss most about Formula Ford?
Just getting in, and nobody ever put me under any pressure to do anything when I was out on the racetrack, and I just liked it getting out there and just more or less riding around it.
Yeah.
Running a go-kart around the house at my grandparents' farm and being over to Sugar River Raceway all the time. I learned all my stuff there.
Yeah.
I never went to an organized driver's school. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, my dad told me to go out and do the best I could, whether it was a go-kart or snowmobile or sports cars. Mm-hmm.
So if we look now, quite a years on from your last Formula Ford race, if a semi backed up to your house and unloaded one car from the time frame of when you raced, what car would you hope it was?
Well, would I have to look at it or drive it? If I had to look at it, it'd be an ADF. I don't know what it was about those. I just loved the looks of them. Mm-hmm. But if I had to drive it, I'd have to go back to the 540 again.
Okay.
I don't know what it was about that car, Jack, but it treated me real good for 2 years.
And you fall in love with a car like that, don't you?
Yeah, and Carl wanted to give me a new one for 1980, and I told him that I said I knew what I have here, and I'd just soon keep it. He mm-hmm. said, you know, that was all right with him. He was real easy to work with. You.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with him at all.
Yeah. So if we look back at again, your competition, there's a lot of names that stick out. The David Lorings of the world, the Dave Wietzenhoffs. Are there any drivers that, in your mind, kind of went underappreciated during that time? Perhaps they didn't win big races or whatever, but that you thought had a lot of potential or you know, could be reckoned with if they had better equipment?
Well, when I was racing go-karts, there was two guys I raced go-karts against that... Between the three of us, it seemed like whoever got to the end of the straightaway first won the race. That would be Mike Purcell. He stuck with the go-karts.
Yeah.
And John Bergette. I raced go-karts with those guys probably for 10 years, and we had some battles, and then I showed up at the sports car track with my Formula Ford. John Bergette was there with a Formula Ford, but... I don't know, those are two guys I certainly would have thought that would have gone as far as I did or had the luck that I had, but
yeah,
didn't pan out that way.
And Mike Purcell, my third weekend racing karts, and I started in 96 with a seven-year-old chassis, and we were at a Badger Kart Club in Dousman, and my third weekend, I qualified third out of 17, and I could hear somebody coming on the third lap, and I just drove it off the end of one, and the chain wrapped around the axle and broke. And we went over by Purcell, and he was just the nicest guy, and helped, you know, when we ran locally, he was always helping everybody, but he always appreciated business and just talking about racing, and it was just a stellar guy.
Yeah, you know, back in the day when I was racing against him, they didn't live probably 30 miles from us, and his father Bob was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We were running McCulloughs at the time, and his dad was a really good McCulloch engine mechanic, and I remember when I started running an 820 West Bend, why he'd set our carburetors up for us to run alcohol.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was quite the competition back in his younger days.
Yeah. So if we look at your career, what, in your words, or in your mind, would be, looking back, your greatest race you ever had?
Well, certainly winning back-to-back Juton Sprints in 1979 and 1980 would stand out, but
yeah,
one that got away from me was, I think it was in July or August of 1980, I was out at Mid-Ohio. All the big shots were out there: Wietzenhoff, Tim Evans, Ed Pym, John Paul Jr. And we qualified on the pole, and I pulled out a lead, and it was about the sixth or seventh lap. I went under the bridge around the first corner and started up towards the keyhole, and I ran into the back of somebody.
Mm.
And I thought about that more than I care to remember in the last 40 years, and I still don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But it knocked the nose off and put me out in the grass. And, you know, I ran into that guy. I was probably in third gear. Ran into the back of him and knocked the nose off that 540. Bent the braces for the nose. Mm-hmm. Never touched the radiator. Mm-hmm. Or never knocked it out of alignment.
Wow.
So that 540 was probably the strongest car I'd ever driven.
Hmm. So you got out of the sport in the early 80s, and I know you've tracked it a bit since. Where do you see it all going?
Well, I would like to see a series like they had back in the 70s, Formula 5000 series, big mm-hmm. tires, big engines, you know, something that you shift, you know, take your hand off the steering wheel and shift the stuff with paddle shifters and stuff like that. Why? I'm not too interested in that anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've been to many of the vintage races, but people my age are starting to really run and quite seriously Club Fords, ranging, you know, 1973 through 81, and seeing that as kind of the golden age of Formula Ford, when you had so many marks out there. And it literally was, you know, there weren't too many chassis that were absolute duds, but it all comes down to how you're going to drive the car. And we all try to have a good competitive time, but keep up the camaraderie when the helmets are off.
So. Yeah, you know, I drove a couple of, in those vintage races, a gentleman in town had a older Crosley. I can't remember what year it was, but I drove it down to Blackhawk Farm a couple times, and it was pretty exciting running on those Avon tires. It was sure different running on slicks.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So my Eagle, of course, never ran on treads originally. It would run on, you know, Goodyear or Firestones, and running that in vintage, compared to the Eldon that we're restoring, which was designed for treads but had to run on slicks back in the day, we've been talking in the shop. We think the Eldon might end up being a little quicker, just because it's running a tire it was designed for.
Yeah, you know, I think it was 1976. Bruce Kramer invited my parents and I to go over to England to the Eldon shop, and coming from Janesville, there's a big General Motors plant in Janesville. It's gone now, but I went over to England, and I was real excited. I thought, boy, going to a race car factory, and to be honest with you, the shop we had at home was bigger than what they were building Eldon's in.
Yeah.
They do some welding in one garage and pick the frame up and take it over to the other garage and put the suspension on it. I ran a couple times over, and when I was over in England, on those Avon tires. But yeah, everybody ran on those over there.
Yeah. When you were over there, what did you run? What kind of car?
I ran the Eldon.
Oh, okay.
It was a new one, the last one that I'd driven. I think that was, what was that, the 10?
What year would have this been? 76?
Yeah, 76. It was probably in January of 77, because I remember it was pretty chilly.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was one of the ultra rare Mark 17s. That was kind of the car, I think, that year. Looked a little different, if I remember correctly.
Did that have the side radiators on it?
I don't know if that did. I know there was the iteration of the Mark 10C that had that with the big wedge nose. But anyways, well, it's cool that you got to run Formula Ford on two continents.
Yeah, I didn't race, you know, they just had set up like a test day over there, and we went over and just more or less putted around. I didn't want to wreck anything over there.
Sure. So looking back, and like I said, I believe firmly that the vintage form of Formula Ford is what's going to keep Formula Ford growing in the years to come. Obviously, SCCA has changed what Formula Ford is currently, because they've allowed Hondas in, and you know, you look at the budgets of some of the teams running nationally, and it's absurd. But I believe the vintage end of thing is that's where it's all going to grow going forward. And with that, there's a lot more attention to the legacy of Formula Ford, and not only the cars, but the people who made them famous. What do you think of the fact that people my age know your name as being one of the big names of Formula Ford in the day?
It's kind of flattering, because, you know, I hadn't really thought it was that big a deal at the time when I started in Formula Fords. Formula V was the biggest class. And as time went on, 3 or 4 years went by 1979, Sports Car Club of America had a rule that you could only start 20 cars per mile of racetrack. So you get up, we were up at Elkhart Lake in 79 at the June Sprints, and they could only start 80 cars. And that was quite a sight to see, 80 Formula Fords on the grid at Elkhart Lake.
Yeah. And last year at the 50th for Club Ford, we had 73 in Club Ford.
And yeah, I remember running down at Blackhawk in 79 and 80, there were so many Formula Fords down there that they'd run a qualifying race.
Wow.
And it was, you know, down there they start 30, 35 cars, but you go, you know, to a sports car race like that and have to run a qualifying race, that's really something.
Yeah. So if we look at what you're up to nowadays, what do you do to get the same thrill that you got racing cars?
Other than hanging around with Stan Mile and why I go watch him every once in a while. But I don't know. I haven't been to too many races. I just work and try to watch Formula One races long enough to see which one of the Mercedes gets out front.
Yeah.
And then I just, after the Mercedes get out in front, why, I just hope that they interview Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, I think we all hope for that.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate your time this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't realize that what I did was, you know, I'm glad somebody appreciates it. Let me put it that way. It's just something I grew up doing, racing, and it just came natural to me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure next time I run at Blackhawk, I'll let Stan know, and we'll set aside some pit passes for you.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate it, and thank you for everything.
Gary, thank you.
What a great conversation. Thank you to Gary for a little bit of his time and for sharing a large part of his life with us, with having to do with his Formula Ford time and racing cars and Sports 2000 and other classes as well. Thanks to Andrew Milam for sponsoring today's episode. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode or recommend somebody going forward, I'm all ears. You can find me at jacquesdreesing@gmail.com. And you've been listening to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. Cheers.